Chapter 16. There were five people in the room. Judge Waring sat at one end of the table, surrounded by his law books and tapes. Leon Cartwright faced the massive, ponderous figure of Reese Varick, separated by two heaped ashtrays and an ugly pitcher of ice water. Bentley and Major Schaefer sat across from each other at the low end of the table. The final chair was empty. Oster, the IPVC technicians, the directorate officials, the Hill brass, had been barred. They were in the game room and the gym and basking around the pool. Through the heavy wood door of the antechamber filtered the faint vibrations of men and women at play.
"No smoking," Judge Waring muttered.
He glared suspiciously from Varick to Cartwright and back to Varick.
"Is the recording business going?"
"Yes," Schaefer said.
The recording robot crept agilely along the table and took up a position in front of Reese Varick.
"Thanks,"
Varick said, as he collected his papers and prepared to begin.
"Is this the fellow?"
Waring asked, indicating Bentley.
"He's the one I came for,"
Varick said with a brief glance at Bentley.
"But he's not the only one. They're all breaking their oaths, turning disloyal and betraying me."
His voice trailed off vaguely.
"Certainly not like the old days."
He roused himself and quietly delivered his statement.
"Bentley was dropped by Wazo Lear. He was a derelict classified without a position. He came to me at Batavia looking for an 8-8 position. That's his class. Things were bad for me at that time. I didn't know what lay ahead. I was thinking I might have to lay off some of my own staff. Anyhow, I took him on, in spite of my own uncertainty. I took him into my household, gave him an apartment at Farben."
Schaefer shot a quick glance at Cartwright. He was ahead of Varick's spoken words.
"Everything was in disorder, but I gave Bentley what he wanted. I put him on my biochemist research staff. I gave him a woman to sleep with, fed him, and took care of him. I brought him into my biggest project."
Varick raised his voice a trifle.
"He was given a responsible position in the project at his own insistence. He stated he wanted to get in on policy level. I trusted him and gave him what he asked for. At the crucial moment, he betrayed me. He killed his immediate superior, dropped his work, and fled. He was too cowardly to go on, so he broke his oath. The critical project collapsed because of him. He came here aboard a directorate ship and tried to swear onto the quizmaster."
Varick was silent. He had finished. Bentley heard the words with a kind of dull, growing surprise. Was that what had happened? Waring was looking at him curiously, waiting for him to speak. Bentley shrugged. He had nothing to say. It was out of his hands entirely. Cartwright spoke up.
"What was Bentley's job in this project?"
Varick hesitated.
"He was doing substantially the same work as the other Class 8-8 people."
"Was there any difference?"
Varick was silent a moment.
"Not that I can recall."
"That's a lie," Schaefer said to Judge Waring. "He knows of a difference."
Varick nodded reluctantly.
"There was one difference," he admitted. "Bentley asked for and got the initial position. He would have taken the project to its final stage. He was trusted completely."
"What was that stage?"
Judge Waring asked.
"Bentley's death," Cartwright answered.
Varick didn't contradict him. He examined his papers moodily until finally Judge Waring asked,
"Is that true?"
Varick nodded.
"Did Bentley know?"
Judge Waring demanded.
"Not at first. It wasn't possible to make the information available to him immediately. He had just arrived on the staff. He betrayed me when he found out."
Varick's heavy hands gripped his papers convulsively.
"He destroyed the project. They all pulled out. They all let me down."
"Who else betrayed you?"
Schaefer asked curiously. Varick's strong jaw moved.
Eleanor Stevens, Herb Moore.
Oh, Schaefer said. I thought Moore was the man Bentley killed. Varick nodded.
Moore was his immediate superior. He was in charge of the project.
If Bentley killed Moore, and Moore had betrayed you... Schaefer turned to Judge Waring. It sounds as if Bentley was acting as a loyal serf. Varick snorted.
Moore betrayed me afterwards, after Bentley.
He broke off. Go on, Schaefer said.
After Bentley killed him.
Varick said woodenly and with difficulty.
What's that?
Judge Waring asked testily.
I don't understand.
Tell him what the project was, Schaefer suggested mildly. Then he'll understand.
Varick studied the table in front of him. He dog-eared a paper and finally spoke.
I have nothing more to say.
He got slowly to his feet.
I withdraw the material relating to Moore's death. That really isn't relevant.
What do you stand on? Cartwright asked.
Bentley pulled out and dropped his work. He left the job I assigned him. The job he took on when he swore on to me.
Yes, Varick agreed.
But he should have stayed. It was his job.
Cartwright also rose. I have nothing else to say, he said to Judge Waring. I swore Bentley on because I considered him legitimately free of his prior oath to Varick. I considered the oath broken by Varick. Bentley was sent to his death without knowledge. A protector isn't supposed to send a classified serf to involuntary death. If the serf has a classification, he must get that serf's written agreement.
Judge Waring's beard bobbed up and down.
A classified serf must agree. A protector can only destroy his classified serf on an involuntary basis if the serf has broken his oath. In breaking his oath, the serf forfeits his rights but remains his protector's property.
Judge Waring gathered up his law books and tapes.
The case here rests on one point. If the protector in question broke his side of the oath first, the serf in question was legally within his rights to drop his work and leave. But if the protector did not break his side of the oath prior to the serf's departure, then the serf is a felon and liable to the death penalty.
Cartwright moved toward the door. Varick followed after him, his heavy face dark and brooding, hands shoved deep in his pockets.
That's it, then, Cartwright said. We'll wait for your decision.
Bentley was with Rita O'Neill when the decision came. Schaefer approached him briefly.
I've been scanning old Judge Waring, he said. He's finally made up his mind.
It was evening in the resort. Bentley and Rita were sitting in one of the small sidebars of the resort, two vague shapes in the dim, color-twisting shadows that hung around their table. A single aluminum candle sputtered between them. Directorate officials were sitting here and there in the room, murmuring, gazing vacantly ahead, sipping their drinks. A Macmillan moved silently around.
Well, Bentley said. What is it?
It's in your favor, Schaefer said. He'll announce it in a few minutes. Cartwright told me to let you know as soon as possible.
Then Varick has no claim over me,
Bentley said wonderingly.
I'm safe.
That's right.
Schaefer moved away from the table.
Congratulations.
He disappeared through the entrance and was gone. Rita put her hand on Bentley's.
Thank heavens.
Bentley felt no emotion, only an empty sort of daze.
I guess that settles it,
he murmured. He absently watched a flow of color move up the side of the wall, hover against the ceiling, and then redescend like a fluid spider. It dissolved back into basic swirls and dabs, then formed once more and started its slow crawl back up.
We should celebrate, Rita said.
Yes, I'm where I wanted to be.
Bentley sipped the remains of his drink.
Working for the directorate, sworn in to the quizmaster, this is what I set out for that day. It seems like a long time ago. Well, I've finally arrived.
He gazed down at his glass and was silent.
How do you feel?
Not much different. Rita tore apart a match folder and fed the fragments to the metallic candle.
You're not satisfied, are you?
I'm as far from satisfaction as it's humanly possible to be.
Why?
She asked softly. I haven't really done anything. I thought it was the hills, but Wakeman was right. It isn't the hills, it's the whole society. The stench is everywhere. Getting away from the hill system doesn't help me or anybody else. He pushed his drink angrily away. I could simply hold my nose and pretend it isn't there, but that isn't enough. Something has to be done about it. The whole weak, bright thing has to be pulled down. It's rotten, corrupt. It's ready to fall on its face. But something has to go up in its place. Something has to be built. Tearing down isn't enough. I've got to help build up the new. It has to be different for other people. I'd like to do something that really alters things. I have to do something that alters things.
Maybe you can.
Bentley looked ahead into the future from where he was sitting. How? Where'll the chance come from? I'm still a serf. I'm still tied down and under oath.
You're young. We're both young. We've got a lot of years ahead of us to do things and plan things.
Rita lifted her glass.
We've a whole lifetime to alter the course of the universe.
Bentley smiled.
Okay, I'll drink to that.
He raised his own glass and touched hers with a clear clink.
But not too much.
His smile ebbed away.
Varric is still hanging around. I'll wait until he leaves to do my drinking.
Rita finished feeding bits of paper to the white-hot candle flame.
What would happen if he killed you?
They'd shoot him.
What would happen if he killed my uncle?
They'd take away his power card. He'd never be Quizmaster.
He won't be Quizmaster anyhow,
Rita said quietly.
What's on your mind?
Bentley roused himself. What are you thinking?
I don't believe he'll go back empty-handed. He can't stop at this point.
She glanced up at him, dark-eyed and serious.
It's not over, Ted. He has to kill somebody.
Bentley started to answer. At that moment, a slim shadow fell over the table. He glanced up, one hand in his pocket, against the cold heel of his gun.
Hello,
Eleanor Stevens said.
Mind if I join you?
She sat down quietly facing them, hands folded calmly in front of her, a fixed, mechanical smile on her lips. Her green eyes flashed brightly at Bentley, and then at Rita. In the half-shadows of the bar, her hair glowed a deep rust red, soft and heavy against her bare neck and shoulders.
"Who are you?"
Rita said. Green eyes dancing, Eleanor leaned forward to light her cigarette from the candle.
"Just a name. Not really a person anymore. Isn't that right, Ted?"
"You'd better get out of here," Bentley said. "I don't think Varric wants you with us."
"I haven't seen Varric since I got here, except at a distance. Maybe I'll leave him. Maybe I'll just walk off. Everybody else seems to be doing it."
"Be careful," Bentley said.
"Careful about what?"
Eleanor blew a cloud of gray smoke around Bentley and Rita. "I couldn't help hearing what you were saying."
"You're right."
Her eyes were fixed intently on Rita. She spoke rapidly, in a sharp, brittle voice.
"Varric is trying to decide. He wants you, Ted, but he'll settle for Cartwright if he can't get you. He's down in his quarters trying to make up his mind. He used to have Moore around to arrange things in a neat mathematical equation. Assign an arbitrary value of +50 for killing Bentley, but -100 for being shot in retribution. Assign an arbitrary value of +40 for killing Cartwright, but a -50 for losing his power card. Both ways he loses."
"That's right," Bentley said warily. "He loses both ways."
"Here's another," Eleanor said brightly. "I thought this one up myself."
She nodded merrily to Rita.
"I mean, you thought it up, but I made up the equation. Assign an arbitrary value of +40 for killing Cartwright, and then try this. Assign a -100 by Cartwright for being killed. That takes care of that part. That's for Rhys. Then there's my own, but that's not much."
"I don't understand what you're talking about,"
Rita said indifferently.
I do, Bentley said. Look out!
Eleanor had already moved. On her feet, like a silent cat, she grabbed up the aluminum candle and ground the tube of bubbling flame into Rita's face. Bentley slammed the candle away. With a tinny grumble, it rolled from the table and clanked onto the floor. Soundlessly, Eleanor slipped around the table to Rita O'Neill. Rita sat pawing helplessly at her eyes. Her black hair and skin were smoking and charred. The acrid odor of seared flesh filled the murky air of the bar. Eleanor yanked the woman's hand away. Something glittered between the girl's fingers, a jagged scarf pin that came swiftly up at Rita's eyes. Bentley hurled the girl away. She clung to him desperately, clawing and stabbing blindly until he shook her loose. Green eyes wild and glazed, she spun away and vanished into the black shadows of the room. Bentley turned quickly to Rita O'Neill.
I'm all right, Rita said between clenched teeth. Thanks. The candle went out, and she didn't get me with a pin. Better try to catch her.
People on all sides were leaping up and hurrying over. Eleanor had already disappeared from the bar, out into the corridor. A Macmillan medical attendant wheeled efficiently from its emergency locker into the bar and over to the table. Rapidly, it cleared the people back, Bentley along with the others.
Go on,
Rita said patiently, her hands over her face, elbows resting against the table.
You know where she's going. Try to stop her. You know what he'll do to her.
Bentley left the bar. The corridor was deserted. He began to run toward the descent lift. A moment later, he emerged on the ground level of the resort. A few people stood around here and there. At the far end of the corridor, he glimpsed a flash of green and red. He raced forward. He turned a corner and stopped dead. Eleanor Stevens stood, facing Rhys Varick.
Listen to me, she was saying. Don't you understand? It's the only way!
Her voice rose in shrill panic.
Rhys, for God's sake, believe me. Take me back. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I left you, but I won't do it again. I'm bringing you this, aren't I?
Varick saw Bentley. He smiled slightly and reached out to take firm hold of Eleanor's wrist with his iron-hard fingers.
We're back together. All three of us.
You've got it wrong, Bentley said to him. She didn't mean to betray you. She's completely loyal to you.
I don't think so, Varick said. She isn't worth anything. She's treacherous, childish. She's no good.
Then let her go. Varick considered.
No, he said finally. I'm not going to let her go.
Rhys!
The girl wailed.
I told you what they said! I told you how you can do it, don't you understand? You can do it now. I made it possible. Take me back. Please, take me back.
Yes, Varick admitted. I can do it. But I had already worked it out.
Bentley stepped in fast, but this time, not fast enough.
Ted!
Eleanor screamed.
Help me!
Varick swept her up and lugged her in three giant strides to a supply sphincter. Beyond the transparent balloon, the dead, bleak surface of the moon stretched out. Varick lifted the screaming, struggling girl high, and with one quick shove, threw her sprawling through the sphincter, outside the balloon. Bentley stood paralyzed as Varick stepped away from the sphincter. The girl stumbled and fell into the rubble and heaps of frigid rock, arms flailing, her breath a frozen cloud hanging from her mouth and nose. She tried to drag herself to her feet, her body half turned toward the balloon, face distorted, eyes bulging. For one pleading instant, she crept like a mashed insect toward Bentley, hands groping, clutching futilely. Then her chest and visceral cavity burst. Bentley closed his eyes as an expanding mass of rupturing, lashing organs burst into the airless void of the lunar surface, a sickening explosion of organic parts that immediately solidified to brittle crystals. It was over. The girl was dead. Numbed, Bentley plucked out his hand weapon. People were racing up the corridor.
An emergency alarm was wailing unhappily up and down. Varric stood unmoving, without any particular expression. Schaefer knocked Bentley's popper from his numb hand.
No good. She's dead. She's dead!
Bentley nodded.
Yes, I know.
Schaefer bent to pick up the gun.
I'll keep this. He's going to get away with it, Bentley said. It's legal, Schaefer agreed. She wasn't classified.
Bentley moved away. Vaguely, he made his way back to the ramp in the direction of the infirmary. Images of the dead girl drifted around him, mixed with the burning face of Rita O'Neill and the cold, dead horror of the moon's surface. He stumbled onto the ascent ramp and started dully up. Footsteps and hoarse, heavy breathing sounded behind him. The ramp shuddered under a ponderous weight. Varric had followed.
"Wait a minute, Bentley," he said. "I'll come along with you. I have an arrangement I want to discuss with Cartwright. A business transaction I think he'll be interested in."
Varric waited until Judge Waring, muttering and fumbling with his chair, had finally seated himself. Across from him, Cartwright sat straight and white-faced, still coming out of shock.
"How's your niece?"
Varric asked.
"She'll be all right," Cartwright said. "Thanks to Bentley."
"Yes,"
Varric agreed.
"I always thought Bentley had something. I knew he could act when it was necessary. It was her face Eleanor struck for.
They can fix her up with artigraft. It didn't get to her eyes, mostly her skin and hair. It was her eyes the girl was after."
Bentley couldn't stop looking at Rhys Varric. Varric seemed calm and collected. His breathing had returned to normal. His face had a gray, mottled look, but his hands had stopped trembling. It was as if he were recovering his strength from an orgy of sexual passion, a spasm of total release, brief and overwhelming.
"What do you want?" Cartwright asked him.
He turned to Judge Waring.
"I don't know what this is about."
"No,"
Judge Waring agreed crossly.
"What is this, Rhys? What have you got on your mind?" "I want you to be here," Varric said to him. "I have a proposal to offer Cartwright. I want you to hear it out and see that it's legal."
He got out his massive popper and placed it on the table in front of him.
"We've come to a dead end. I think nobody will disagree. You can't kill me, Leon. I'm not an assassin. It would be murder and you'd be liable. I'm here as a guest."
"You're perfectly welcome,"
Cartwright said tonelessly, not taking his eyes from Varric.
"I came here to kill Bentley, but I can't. Stalemate. Stalemate on all sides. You can't kill me, I can't kill Bentley, and I can't kill you."
Silence.
"Or can I?"
Varric said thoughtfully. He examined his popper.
"I think maybe I will."
Judge Waring spoke up disgustedly.
"You'll be out of the M game the rest of your life. That's a stupid thing to do. What'll it get you? Pleasure? Satisfaction? Will it be any satisfaction to lose your P-card?"
Judge Waring demanded.
"No,"
Varric admitted.
"But I have my three hills. That won't be affected."
Cartwright didn't stir. He nodded slightly, following Varric's line of reasoning.
"At least you'd come out of this alive. You'd be that much ahead of me, wouldn't you?"
"That's right," Varric agreed. "I wouldn't be Quizmaster, but neither would you. They'd have to twitch the bottle again."
Schaefer entered the room. He glanced at Judge Waring and took a seat.
"Leon," he said to Cartwright, "this is a bluff on his part. The girl took him the idea before he killed her. He doesn't intend to kill you. He wants to scare you."
Schaefer's cold eyes flickered.
"Interesting."
"I know," Cartwright said. "He's going to give me a choice. Death or an arrangement." "What's the arrangement, Rhys?"
Varric dug into his pocket and got out his power card.
"A swap," he said. "Your card for mine."
"That'll make you Quizmaster,"
Cartwright observed.
And you'll be alive. You'll come out of this with your life. I'll come out of it with a quizmastership. The stalemate is broken.
Then you'll have Bentley,
Cartwright said.
That's right,
Varric answered. Cartwright turned to Schaefer.
Will he kill me if I refuse?
Schaefer was silent for a long time.
Yes, he said at last. He'll kill you. He won't leave here without killing you or getting Bentley back. If you don't trade, he'll pop you and give up his card. If you trade, he'll have Bentley again. Either way, he gets one of you. He knows he can't get both.
Which would he prefer?
Cartwright asked, interested.
He'd prefer to have Bentley. He's reached the point where he respects you, almost admires you, and he has to have Bentley under control again.
Cartwright searched his pockets until he found his neat little package of power cards. He sorted through them slowly.
Is this legal? He said to Judge Waring.
You can trade, Waring said gruffly. People buy and sell them all the time.
Bentley half rose. Helplessly he gestured.
Cartwright, are you really?
Sit down and keep still, Judge Waring snapped sharply. You have no say in this.
Cartwright found the correct card, checked it with his other papers, and then laid it down on the table.
There's mine.
You're willing to trade?
Varric demanded.
That's right.
You understand what it means. You're legally giving up your position. With your card goes everything.
I know, Cartwright said. I understand the law.
Varric turned around and faced Bentley. The two of them gazed at each other a moment, neither of them speaking. Then Varric grunted.
It's a deal,
he said.
Wait, Bentley said thickly. For God's sake, Cartwright, you can't just...
He broke off futilely.
You know what he'll do to me, don't you?
Cartwright ignored him. He was returning the little package of P-cards to his coat pocket.
Go ahead, he said mildly to Varric. Let's get it over with so I can go downstairs and see how Rita is.
Fine, Varric said.
He reached forward and picked up Cartwright's power card.
Now I'm Quizmaster.
Cartwright's hand came out of his pocket. With his small, antiquated popper, he shot Rhys Varric directly in the heart. Still clutching the power card, Varric slid forward and lay with his face against the table, eyes wide, mouth slack with wonder.
Is it legal?
Cartwright asked the old judge.
Yes,
Waring admitted admiringly.
Absolutely.
He nodded solemnly.
Of course. You lose that packet of cards you hold.
I realize that, Cartwright said.
He tossed them to the judge.
I like it here at the resort. This is the first time I've ever been in a modern leisure resort. I look forward to sunning myself and taking it easy. I'm an old man and I'm tired.
Bentley sagged.
He's dead. It's over.
Oh, yes, Cartwright agreed. It's completely over.
He got to his feet.
Now we can go downstairs and see how Rita is.